The year is 1996. Show me the money. You had me at hello. These may have been Tupac Shakur's last words as he was murdered after Jerry Maguire took the nation by storm. Meanwhile, across the pond, Chris Martin and Johnny Buckland became fast friends during orientation at University College London. Joined by classmate Guy Berryman, they formed the band The Pectorals, though the name wouldn't last as long as a tea and crumpet around a hungry and thirsty bloke. Martin asked Phil Harvey to act as manager of the band, and Will Champion, a gifted musician who'd never played the drums, joined as the percussionist of the band. In 1998, the Chaps were signed to an indie label and quickly put out the Brothers and Sisters EP. In 1999, Parlophone signed the boys to a 5-album contract. Later that year, they released another EP, and the single Bigger Stronger started getting airplay on BBC Radio 1, just in time for turmoil to knock at the band's door. An unwelcomed guest. After a dispute, Chris Martin kicked Will Champion out of the band and went into a guilt-fueled drinking binge. Champion would rejoin the band, and they agreed to fire anyone who used hard drugs from that point on. Between 1999 and 2000, the boys put together their first full-length album, Parachutes. In March of 2000, they had their first top 40 hit with their first single from the album, Shiver. Their next single, Yellow, would reach top 5, and the album debuted at number 1 on the UK charts. With 7 Grammy wins, more than 90 million records sold, and the way people can tell that other people are gay, today we stand by Coldplay.
The year was 1865. Everyone in the United States believed that women should not be allowed to vote. Yet we still celebrate those people as great Americans today.
Yeah?
Well, isn't that stupid? Like, wouldn't you think that we would be like, wait a second, like, they were really stupid back
yeah,
then.
Yeah.
Like, why were they so dumb?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we, you know, like, we're in a point in the country right now where everyone's like, oh, the monuments for these horrible people should uh-huh. come down. But, like, but nobody was really good.
But they're like history, Jared. Well, this is an anti-political podcast.
Well,
you're
I
not
did.
Here for your libtard agenda.
Jeez, I walked into the. I thought I was doing Jamie Kilstein's podcast today, I guess.
Oh, man. He's what a is piece it of shit, it turns
yeah,
out.
Yeah, that's fine.
Yeah, I don't know what his is called. I know it got, like, shut down, though.
I'm smarter than you with yeah. Drew Michael. That's Ooh. The name of his podcast.
What was I just about to say about Jamie Kilstein? Historically, one of the worst late-night sets of all time.
Somebody, worse than the Rob Delaney, which I don't think ever aired.
I think that it did air, but they took it down very quickly.
Here's a hot take on that mm-hmm. Rob Delaney thing.
Yep.
The only people that should be upset in any way are people that had submitted their video to Kimmel
mm-hmm.
and, like, were next, and then just, like, it never happened.
Yeah.
Everyone else needs to chill the fuck out about this video.
I feel bad. I talked about this on Stop Podcasting Yourself, but I think that he's hilarious on Twitter. And
oh,
like,
absolutely.
He's maybe the best.
Nice guy. You worked with
nice
him.
Guy.
You
nice guy.
You completely buried him.
Oh, people liked him, though. Well, Josh Cox opened for him later.
Right, and you guys both buried him. But my point is that, like, his fans didn't even notice that you did that because they were here to see him.
Sure. And he was super nice, but
you know, could not have been nicer. I think that who would turn it down?
That's what I always say. Because, like, I think maybe Ben or somebody.
Like,
here
why did
mad.
We teleport back to, like, when I was in high school? It's like Jawbreaker and Green Day are not allowed to sell out. It's like
yeah.
fuck off, man. we're done with that line of thinking.
Yeah,
if you get offered Kimmel, you're gonna take it.
Sure, sure.
I just got a text message from Jared, too. Jared Cheek.
Yeah.
And I tried to get him to call in and be me on this. He went to Jared. They went to
that
Jared.
That would have been great. I was trying Didn't to get work. Tommy to do that.
Yeah, well, he's dead.
Nobody's alive. Oh, by the way, welcome to the show. This is Stand By Your Band. Hello there, piss freaks, and Stand By Your Band. Wait. Santonio Banderas's?
Sure.
Sorry. It's been, look, it's been.
No. No.
it's been a weird couple of weeks. You'll notice that our beloved my beloved co-host, Tommy McNamara, is not on today's episode. Today's a special. We went to Jared exclusively episode where we're going to talk about Coldplay, but Tommy is not in town with me. We had an episode recorded where we talk about Toby Keith with Ryan Beck. I don't know if it's, I hope that that one gets to go up. My computer crashed. I'm waiting to get it back, and I'm out of town. So we wanted to release an episode for you, and I just happen to be in Bloomington, Indiana, where our beloved friend and foe of the podcast, Jared Thompson, lives.
Man, that's not good.
Wait, what are you talking about?
I mean, I think that I just speak the truth to power. I don't even necessarily know what that term means, but
the last episode we released, you're noted as saying, this is the end of the podcast.
Right. Well, I mean, but then, you know, you say that and then you get asked to be on the podcast and you're like, oh, maybe it's not the end. This is all right. I like this podcast.
Yeah. So we should have some bonus episodes coming out for you, as well as this one's going to come out tomorrow, which is today's Tuesday.
Wait, well, no, tomorrow is today to them.
Yeah. Today is today for you, but it's tomorrow for us, if that makes any sense. Oh. Man, I just got, yeah, oh, by the way, our beloved Tommy McNamara got mugged, so send out your thoughts and prayers to him. We weren't able to get a hold of him for this, because I think his phone is still stolen, but we tried to call his mugger, who stole his phone, and it rang, so maybe he'll be joining the podcast later if he calls us back.
Yeah, we'll see what he does.
Jared, how you doing?
I'm doing just fine, the Comedy Attic is, we really, honestly, here coming up in the fall/winter, we probably have the best, like, 3 or 4 month schedule that we've ever had.
Yeah.
It's pretty crazy.
I mean, you had Tom Dekar, and then...
That's true, he was here.
Leading right into Tiffany Haddish, and then...
Yeah, yeah, but I mean, you know, Bamford's coming back, which
that's
was just
amazing.
Totally crazy.
Yeah.
Like, there's, it was like... Anyway, yeah, that was really exciting. And of course, Jeselnik's coming for his first visit. Arsenio's coming.
It's crazy.
Nate Bargatze.
Oh, I mean, wow. Bargatze's coming back.
Yeah.
That's amazing.
It's star-studded.
Nashville star.
Yep. That's
Nate
right.
Nate Bargatze. Proven that you don't got to live on one of these coasts with these liberal snowflakes.
That's true. You don't have to.
What if this became an alt-right? I know, just transitioned into an alt-right podcast. Well, I don't support these people transitioning into anything.
Oh, man. So, Nate, yeah. Well, so he lives. I think he has places. He's bi-coastal.
Oh, he might be.
One
he's
of,
bi?
Well, we can only hope. You and I would be happy with that.
Yeah, that'd be nice.
He's a nice looking guy.
He's handsome.
Yeah, yeah.
He looks good in a hat.
Yeah, he does. He likes, I don't know if you guys knew this or not, but he likes Vanderbilt.
Is that right? Oh yeah, I've heard.
He never
that.
Really talks he's about a, it or mentions it yeah, or wears their stuff,
never,
but he does like
it's
yeah,
never a big part of his persona.
It's true.
This is the podcast where we talk about Nate Bargatze.
Yeah.
Now, we're here to talk about Coldplay today. This is the episode I think the people have been waiting for.
Well, this is actually this. So this topic, I know you hate when I do this, but
oh
this is how
God.
This podcast was invented.
If that's true,
was
but
because,
not how you think.
Well, but my point is that so I firmly believe, and we have music evidence of this. Mm-hmm. I've brought with me not just my six songs.
Right.
I have two counter argument songs that I will use to prove what I'm getting ready to say, which is this. I'm 40 years old. I've been collecting records. I have over 10,000 records.
Oh my God.
I have been collecting records my whole life, basically. You know, I started listening to music the way that I like it now, about 13, first, you know, favorite few bands, you know, were Green Day, Jawbreaker, a lot of the bands from the Bay Area that were discussed during Rancid.
Mm-hmm.
And basically, so my tastes have been very similar. I like rock and roll. Mostly, I like jazz.
Oh, I've got a song for you then.
Oh, yeah, I know.
Well, so, I like rock and roll.
It's love.
You know, no, but this is okay. A different song.
Oh, okay.
The remix.
Well, so my point is that of all the time that I've spent, the one thing that drives me the most crazy of all in music is that somehow a band that is so easily ignored, like, point being that even if you're listening to Coldplay, and you just simply don't like that kind of music,
yeah,
it can just very easily and simply fall directly into the background with no problem.
Sure.
There's no reason for people to list them as the worst, second worst, third worst band.
Yeah.
Because we live in a world where there are dozens of bands that you can't ignore because of how obnoxious and in-your-face that they are.
Like who?
Well, like, for instance...
Oh, you're going to play it already?
I have two songs that I want to mention. These are two of my least favorite bands ever.
Do you have to go over there?
I think I'm going to have to take this over there to do this.
So, Tom's going to go over. I may lose my microphone, but here's the first song of a band that is never considered... Like, very rarely do people say the Red Hot Chili Peppers are the worst band ever. They're one of the worst bands, in my opinion.
This is crazy. I don't
but
stand
this,
for this.
Just imagine being someone like me who actively hates this music.
Yeah.
And it comes on in a bar, and this happens. You can't just ignore that.
I mean, I think that sounds like elevator music to me. I could oh my god.
No. This is, I can't even, hold on, we gotta wait for the real bad part. Tom is bopping
I'm
along,
dancing.
Just so you know.
Pretty good.
But my point is that, like, I don't, that's fine if you can like either one of those bands.
I don't actually.
Why
well,
no, you
not
don't.
A 311
I'm
man,
saying
I do
that
like Red Hot Chili Peppers.
The only thing that I'm really here to dispel is the idea that Coldplay could ever be considered amongst the worst bands currently or of all time.
Yeah.
It just doesn't make any sense. There is no reason for you to. It's sort of like when you meet someone who is so bothered by something that's like not that big of a deal,
yeah,
and they would compare it. They're like, it's just worse than slavery, or it's worse than Auschwitz, or
yeah,
it's, you know.
Wait, do people say that?
Well, you know what I mean. Like, people that over-exaggerate, and I'm a person very...
This is stuff you do.
That's what I'm saying. I very actively speak in nothing but hyperbole and black and white. I totally agree with you. But my point is that, like, when you're talking about something like this, I just prove... Like, here's my... You can like the Red Hot Chili Peppers, but the average person that doesn't like them, if they hear that song in a bar, or they hear Shiver in a bar by Coldplay, one of them, you won't even realize the song has started and ended.
That's true.
How is it possible?
That's a complaint, though, against them.
What, that they're too boring?
That they can blur into the background. It's just elevator music that people...
Right, so that's just someone that doesn't like them, which makes sense. I get that. Like, but, the one thing, I don't know if many of your listeners know who Dan Coleman is. He books all the bands at the Bishop.
Yeah,
he's a black guy in Bloomington. There aren't that many of them, unfortunately.
You'll see him around.
But he gives me a lot of shit for thinking he'll say that Coldplay is one of my favorite bands, and that's never been true. They've never been like in my top five favorite bands at any given moment.
Okay.
But I have liked them for a long time.
Yeah.
I mean, as we all did, we gave up on them a couple albums ago.
Sure.
And I can't defend anything they've done in maybe 10 years or so, maybe 5, 6, 7 years.
When did X and Y come out? I was in high school.
Well, they did.
That's when I got really into
them. I mean, I'm bad on dates, but that must have been...
I think it was 2005?
Yeah, I mean, it was like, 2006? What, their third album?
That was their third third full-length album, yeah.
Right, so between that and Prospector's March, the EP, that was basically... And then the album Viva La Vida, that was it.
That
to
was
me,
like the
Prospector's March album, and it was over. And
what I'm saying is that
I have basically the nail in the coffin of the band as one of my songs, because you can start to see the direction that they were wanting to go into, and it was not good at all.
I'm guessing
it's basically
that
the last
Life in Technicolor.
Well, no, it's Lost.
Oh, so, yeah, because then they fully go in on that. That's what they commit to for the rest
The stuff that I don't necessarily love about the song Lost is what they decided to go full throttle in as a band.
Interesting, because I'm sure you put this on there for this reason. I loved that song when it came out. It was maybe my favorite song on the album because I was like, this is so different from them.
Sure.
But also, it still reined in a little bit. But it's like a nice little break from kind of the other stuff, because I listened to that album today because I forgot. I did the same thing where that was the last album that I really cared about. Milo Xyloto, I was like, I just seeing the name of that album, I was like, fuck this.
That was
the next one.
Wasn't there, so there wasn't the blue album with the heart on it was
that's
after
Ghost
that?
Ghost Stories, which was
so
after
then Milo Xyloto was the last record that I bought. I mean, I bought it on, as I do with anything like that War on Drugs record on Friday, I was at Landlock Music, bought it the first day that it was released, and that's how I was with Coldplay back in the day. Like, if they, you know, it used to be Tuesdays, but you would go on a Tuesday, and I mean, I had like the limited edition versions of a bunch of the albums.
Yeah.
I mean, they were a band that I really liked.
They were my favorite band. Like, it's not like that I was like, they're pretty good. They were my favorite band
now,
for like from the time I was like 18 to. I ended up getting more into Radiohead than them after a while.
Well, you went backwards on that. Most people, it's the other way around.
Really?
Well,
they go from
what
Radiohead
I mean
to Coldplay?
I guess someone my age
would
view Coldplay. If you, here's my point. If you listen to Radiohead, it was split right down the middle of people who said, this is just a Radiohead ripoff, which is not an unfair thing to say. Or I like it because I like bands who sound like Radiohead. And that's exactly what Coldplay, the first album, for sure, made you think of, like, the softer side of Radiohead. Like, the couple singles that Radiohead had in, like, in a you know, the mid-90s.
That's fair. I guess because Radiohead transformed so much into something completely different from Coldplay.
Sure.
I don't even associate them, but I guess back when I got into Coldplay, that's when I was into the bends and from radio the songs that sounded like Coldplay.
Sure. Well, that's what I'm saying, is that, like, I think that I'm sure that there's been interviews, and I've never been a big enough fan of Coldplay to, like, necessarily dive into interviews with the band or whatever, but I am sure that this is a fairly well-worn thing that they admit that they probably liked Radiohead. Like, or they've just said, we didn't realize it, one or the other, but my point is like, I'm sure they've heard about this for a long time.
I should have looked this up before the podcast, but I'm looking up if they've said anything. I know that Tom York openly hates Coldplay.
Yeah, well, that, I mean, I could see why. I mean, this doesn't always work out for bands who seem to maybe have, I don't know if ripped off is the right word, but just sort of change themselves to sound like a certain way. But, like, for instance, the Beatles and the Beach Boys seemingly during the Pet Sounds era had a much closer relationship. Like, they were okay with the fact that both band was taking bits and pieces from the other band during that time frame.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like Radiohead ever took anything from Coldplay, though. Because right that, like, there was never a moment where Radiohead went back to sound like Coldplay.
Right.
They only moved forward into being more weird and less singles and more obscurity that a lot of people really liked, including me.
Yeah.
But, you know, when Coldplay made their sort of, we'll just call it, Kid A change.
Yeah.
So this is Milo Xyloto or whatever. When they decided to, like, fundamentally change the way that they made music.
Yeah.
On one side, Radiohead remained good, maybe not quite as good, but it was still interesting.
Yeah.
And Coldplay did not.
Well, it felt like, because the other comparison, and I think this is what Coldplay leaned in on, is U2.
Sure.
And they definitely, like, I mean, they brought on, Eno wasn't on for the whole time.
No,
though.
Sure. I mean, that is... You know, like, this is a thing that happens with music. Like, for instance, Interpol, their first few records are very good.
Mm-hmm.
But people were like, well, they sound just like Joy Division.
Uh-huh.
So, I mean, you know,
it's
like someone saying, oh, someone else already has that premise in comedy. There's only six premises.
Right.
Who gives a shit As long as it's good, it doesn't matter, and yeah. it's not ripped
there's
off.
There's four ways to listen to music, and there's six premises.
Right, exactly. Like, it's just, it, like, I understand if I were the Edge,
mm-hmm.
it might bother me. But yeah. as a music fan, I could care less. Unless it's like a note-for-note remake
sure.
or something.
Yeah.
It there's enough. I was just in Landlocked Music this morning. We were talking about Jason, the owner of the store, and
yeah.
myself were both agreeing. We felt the exact same way about James Taylor.
Mm-hmm.
Neither one of us like his voice at all. Like, we would never listen mm-hmm. to James Taylor because we don't like his voice. But the one interesting thing about James Taylor is that you would never walk into a bar
uh-huh.
and hear a cover band and think, is that possibly James Taylor?
Yeah.
Whereas
yeah.
you could walk in and think that Bono... Like, someone can sound like Bono. Someone can sound like Chris Martin.
Sure.
But the difference is that they're enough different. They sound enough different that it doesn't really... it's not something that goes through my mind that it bothers me if it sounds like it. I just notice that it sounds like it.
Yeah.
I think that's the difference, is that, like, I don't... You know, there are a couple U2 records that are really good.
Uh-huh.
And some that are not so good.
Sure.
And so if Coldplay grew up listening to... the best, you know, if they listened to Boy when they were growing up,
yeah.
or War,
uh-huh.
then why wouldn't it sound like that? That's how music has always worked.
Yeah, that's how every art form works, I think. It's
exactly.
Like, every comic I know, you can trace back
right.
what they liked.
For Bloomington, it's Jeff Tate. it's like, seriously, it's Jeff Tate, it's Tommy Jonigan.
Yeah.
And, you know, there's other people that are sort of mixed in, but those
Kyle
are...
Kyle Kinane is a big
right,
one.
Right, but those are the forefathers of the Bloomington comedy scene.
Forefathers?
Yeah.
I wish I had one father.
Oh, boy.
I've said that before.
Well, you did, but... anyway, you know, have you talked about on the podcast that you had that you were supposed to inherit a Meineke? Have you ever told?
I don't know if we've talked about that on here.
I lived through that. I would like sort of helped you out during that.
What was your?
Well, nothing. I think I just like helped you call them and just try to figure it out or whatever.
Yeah,
it was very strange. Tom inherited a Meineke that then foreclosed. Or
yeah,
like
it closed. They wouldn't let me take it over because I was like 24 or 25,
yeah.
and they were like, "You're too young." And then it closed like a month.
I think
later.
Your Facebook still says that you work at Bloomington Hospital.
Is that right?
I think it does.
Well, I still do some shifts there.
When you come back into town,
yeah, they let me clock in
the bedpan shift. It's not an actual time.
Clock in there. That oh man, that was my peak Coldplay days working at that hospital.
Yeah, for sure.
I remember being on my way to work, just cranking out "Don't Panic."
I mean, let me just say this before we get into the songs.
Yeah, we gotta get into the criticism and stuff. We have so much.
Well,
to
sure,
cover.
But like what I'm saying is that like aside from Mateo,
yeah.
who had a very strong background
mm-hmm.
with Mariah Carey and a couple others where they knew,
mm-hmm.
like, in fact, we were talking about Kyle Ayers.
Uh-huh.
He knew what he was talking about.
Yeah.
He did it. He spoke in like math problems, but he knew what he was saying about what who's his name?
He did the Eagles.
Eagles.
I'm sorry.
Thank you, Jeff. Well, anyway, so but my point is that like most of the time, and including for me with Coldplay, I'm just mm-hmm. going to admit this ahead of time.
Yeah,
the argument is just I like it.
Uh-huh.
That's the argument that
sure.
most people have. Like, no, I don't even remember who'd you have Sean Patton on for 311.
Yeah,
I mean, I didn't listen to it, but is it not just I like it?
It was much more than that.
Yeah.
It was a lot of like. It was like a lot of I like it, but he also did a great job of shitting all over the band at the
yeah.
He was like, I understand everything that's wrong.
No, and I do
this
too.
This song sucks.
This is what I'm saying is that like I like the Coldplay records a lot.
Yeah.
I do. But I know that it's not a defendable thing in the same way that, for instance, OK Computer
yeah.
or the Bends or Kid A is
uh-huh.
or even a Thin Lizzy record or a Nick Drake record.
I just think they're doing different things though. Like they're trying to do a different thing.
Right.
And maybe Parachutes and Rush of Blood weren't, but after that I feel like they know what they're aiming for radio play. Like they want
sure.
singles.
But born from that, and I realize you've got it ready that Pitchfork gave it a 4.9 or whatever.
Yeah.
But to me, when they decided that's what they were doing, I think the X and Y is their best cover-to-cover album.
Yeah, it's...
And so that's not to say, like, I totally understand someone that likes the first two records best or the first album or whatever.
Yeah.
You know, it, but to me, X and Y were a band given an opportunity to do exactly what they wanted to do.
Yeah.
And they, and it didn't hit. It wasn't resounding in the way that they thought that it was.
Yeah.
But that to me was when they decided, this is what we're going to do. This is who we are.
Yeah.
And this is our album.
Uh-huh.
And I'm not surprised it isn't viewed as good of an album as the first two.
Yeah.
But to me, it has a, it, like, one of the things I'm looking for when I listen to music, if we're not talking about like the elite bands that I listen to.
Yeah.
One of the things, and this happens with Hall & Oates, or this happens with Journey, where it's like, I like triumphant music.
Yeah.
I like music that seems like you're soaring through a field, or you're...
We've talked about this. Did you call it horses running?
Yes, it's like galloping through the forest music. Like,
this
it's
music
like,
sounds like horses
if,
running.
Like, if dudes from like the Excalibur era... which I think is a real time frame.
Yeah, yeah, that's a time.
Or like, if they had
medieval times,
if they had headphones on, that's what they'd be listening to.
Isn't it crazy that they didn't? They couldn't hear anything like this back then. You know,
that's
they
so
just,
weird.
They were like, we just discovered the drum.
They also didn't believe that women should vote.
That's pretty crazy.
Like, why are we like, oh, they're great people? They're not great people.
Is anybody calling these people great people?
You know what I mean? Like Brad, for instance, Brad Wilhelm. He has Joshua Chamberlain on his arm.
It was my goal to literally never mention him on this podcast.
Well, we fucked that up.
I'm gonna bleep his name out. Damn it.
Who are you going to have Jeff Tate on doing? Because
he wants to do it this week, and he said Counting Crows, but we just did Counting Crows.
You can't because that's the problem. Is that because you were saying someone was like, oh, I want to defend, and it was like a band that everyone likes. It wasn't this, because he can't do Petty, obviously.
I think,
you know what? He could do Pearl Jam. I think that they have enough hatred around them that you could do it.
I want him to do Third Eye Blind, because me and him both love the first Third Eye Blind album.
He does?
The first two Third Eye Blind albums, this is a Coldplay episode, but I'll say right now, first two Third Eye Blind albums are next to perfect. They're so good.
Oh my God, Tom.
They're
Jesus
so
Christ.
Good. The first one is incredible. And then I think they slowly, well, and the second one, but the third one.
I have a question though. So I don't know who produced the albums. I really don't know anything about them. And I only know, I'm assuming the first album is the one from Can't Hardly Wait. That's that era. That's the first album.
I can't remember.
I Want Something Else, I think is that song.
Yeah.
Okay. Or Semi-Charm Life, whatever that song is called.
Semi-Charm Life is on the first album.
What I don't understand is that like in the studio.
Yeah.
Why didn't they make it to where he can sing? That's what doesn't make any sense to me is that they
He's got a great, a cool voice.
He is off key.
Yeah,
he's out of tune. What I'm saying is.
But I liked that.
There's nothing wrong with that. Yeah. But what I'm saying is that had to be the first example in like top 40 music history where they didn't fix that in post or whatever.
Because I'm wondering what Kiedis' voice. Is his better than that?
Well, I just know that he doesn't sound out of key when he's singing. I don't know if he can sing or not. Well, this is like the same argument we have about that band Cake. Like,
the
he probably
singing.
Can't sing. He just talks. But that's what I'm saying is that, like, to my knowledge, this is the first example of a bit, like, you know, back then especially, like, MTV and or Dick Clark, like, the top 40, like, they were gatekeepers to what... children or like average music fans were allowed to hear.
Yeah.
Like you couldn't just turn you there's no way that you would that you could actively or like I guess I should say inactively hear a band like the Ramones.
Yeah.
Even recently.
Uh-huh.
Until like satellite radio and everything, you know,
yeah,
like
Spotify really changed things a lot.
But point being is that like somehow after all these years of like Freddie Mercury and Robert Plant and all these other singers, Dave Matthews even, who can actually in key, like if there's some sort of like, and there probably is, like a measuring tool that you use in a studio where you have to stay within two sets of lines.
Yeah.
This motherfucker was all the way left or all the way right. And they were just like, all right, let's keep it.
It's a distinct sound.
But I'm just saying it still was relatively unprecedented.
Yeah.
We'll take feedback via Twitter or Facebook if I'm wrong.
Yeah, if you think that his voice sounds normal, then tweet
us. What I'm looking for is examples of people who were in popular music. Like, I'm not talking about a band from the middle of the country in the 70s that made an LP that no one knows. I'm saying bands that would be like represented, you know, like Steely Dan or Boston or bands that got airplay.
I'm trying to think. I it's hard off the top of my head to think of another band that sounds like
So the we're going to do the negative.
Let's talk about we're going to talk about the negatives. We got those. Were there any Facebook comments that stuck out to you, cuz I know you read some of them?
Well, I read through them, and I mean, that's the thing, is that like in a lot of cases some of your guests feel the same way, where it's like the criticism against them isn't entirely wrong.
Sure.
You know, lyrics, I'm not going to sit here and defend, because like lyrics have meant a lot to me at different points in my life.
Yeah.
But Coldplay definitely came about in a time in my life where that wasn't necessarily something I was that interested in.
Okay.
I mean, there is absolutely no question about it, a truth to quote unquote dad rock, or like getting older and things change for you.
Yeah.
And Coldplay's a great example of like, here's what I'm saying. The new War on Drugs record that just was released. I know for sure that when I was 20 years old, I would still love that album.
Yeah.
Because it's just good no matter what.
Uh-huh.
He has, to me, turned a corner that very few people in my lifetime have been able to turn.
Yeah.
And it's just, he just has created two in a row great albums.
Yeah, that last one was so good.
I can't tell you that I would have listened to X and Y when I was 20.
Uh-huh.
I do believe that part of it is just getting older and your responsibilities change. And
yeah.
And, you know, most of the bands that I listened to in high school and college, I'm not going to actively listen to like I used to.
Yeah.
And they're replaced by things that are probably a little bit more pleasant to hear.
Uh-huh.
So the criticism of Coldplay that they're too soft, or that their lyrics are stupid, they're not wrong about it. It's when people, you have a few people on there, and I'm not looking at it like you are.
Yeah.
But you have a few people on there that are like doing what I said earlier about like, where they're like, they're the worst band I've ever heard, and I don't understand why anyone would ever say that. That's not true.
Yeah.
Like, I don't care if you don't like it,
mm-hmm.
but this podcast ends the theory that Coldplay is one of the worst bands of all time. It's just not possible.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. There is a math problem, or like science problem, to this that is not
it's
possible.
Not possible.
Like, it's like saying that you can make fire from water and a shoe. You just can't.
Yeah.
Like, you can't just say that you can.
I don't know about that.
Do you think you could?
I'm not a fire expert, but I bet you could. You probably just use the shoe. If you rubbed the rubber against it,
I don't know. Enough. Someone else, just send it in for the feedback, because I don't know. Do you have some?
I have
name
a few
names?
Things pulled up. Like, yeah, I don't. Yeah, I don't mind naming names.
Yeah,
they
here,
made themselves public. Dave Bergman is mad at Chris Martin for yodeling at the end of Kanye West's song "Homecoming." A great song, which I don't know if we've talked about this on the podcast. I love that song. I listen to it every time I go to Chicago. It's maybe my least favorite thing.
Well, you
think Chris
really
Martin's
you
done.
Should mean Bloomington, since you're from here. But
yeah, I mean when I come here.
Oh, I thought you said when you go to Chicago.
No, and Chicago.
I see.
I guess both. When I go home, but it's more of he's talking about Chicago.
I see. Yeah.
So it makes more sense to listen to it in
so
Chicago.
So he does yodel at the end. I mean, not surprisingly.
Yeah,
I've
there's
never
like an annoying yodeling thing, but his hook and his. I mean, his. You know. He sings the chorus, and it's very pleasant. It's not my favorite part of the song. What else does he complain about? Up into and including Viva La Vida, they were a lame but still very good band. Really expanded their sound each album. They were never cool, but the music was. I don't know.
I know what he means. Like sense. I've seen him in concert,
and Chris Martin has never been cool. I mean, that's just true.
But one thing that I do like about them, and some people will criticize this, and this is the type of thing that I would be critical of. Like, I would be critical of a band like Rage Against the Machine for acting more political than they actually were. Rancid, we talked about that.
Yeah.
Where they want to be credited with being something that they actually aren't really doing anything. Now, in Rage Against the Machine's case, they were, I'm sure, doing something.
Yeah, they were actually like,
but the criticism
active.
At the time was that they were on a major label. Uh-huh. So, but then you'd have the argument, well, if you can reach more people, then how is that bad?
Sure.
So it isn't a clear cut. There is no winner in that argument.
Uh-huh.
Like you could see both sides of it. In fact, I would lean more towards agreeing that if it's better that they're on a major label.
Yeah.
Because then they reach more people, although I see both sides of it. But point being, Coldplay, I remember seeing when I saw them, and this couldn't have been, you know, this had to be 2001, 2002, somewhere in there. I think I went to Houston to see them.
Yeah.
And RIP. And sorry, that was probably wasn't very nice. That,
there's actually a Houston-related thing that I was going to say on this thread, but we'll talk about it.
Obviously,
yeah.
It's terrible. I don't know if you're watching it or not. But
a little bit. It's tough. Yeah, it's very horrible.
But it's really fucked up. But anyway, I went to New Orleans to see them. Not that that matters. But my point is that when I was living in Baton Rouge, we went to the show, and they were already starting to like be actively political. Like,
yeah.
And something so minor as just writing a political slogan on your hand when you're performing at a you know, on the Grammys or whatever,
sure,
can change things for people.
Yeah.
And so, you know, and this was sort of before, like, I don't know if you suffered through the VMAs.
I didn't watch it, yeah.
But, I mean, people are trying to do that stuff, and it's better than not doing it.
Yeah.
But then, because no one else was really, I don't say no one, but, like, it wasn't nearly as accepted to take your time out of, if you have, you know, back then you had very little time in front of the camera.
Yeah.
Like, you know, if you were on the Grammys, that might be the only time within a certain time period that you would be seen
on TV.
In public.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, right.
So for him to write stuff on like his piano and on his hand and all that stuff, you know, I think it turned some people to be more, you know, active.
Uh-huh.
And I don't think there's anything wrong with that.
Sure.
I understand the argument that it's hollow because you never really necessarily saw him like carrying food to people or whatever.
Right.
So it feels like maybe it was more like I look at it very similar to Hillary Clinton in this last election. Was she pro-life at one time? Yes.
Yeah.
Was she anti-gay marriage at one time? Yes. Did she say she wasn't those things to make it, to appeal to folks like you and I to have us vote for her? Yes. But it's still better that she is pro-choice.
That she made the change.
Right. It's much better.
Even if it was political or whatever, if she doesn't actually, if she's doing it, she's doing it.
Right,
yeah.
Because she's still going to change people's minds.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what I'm saying is that, like, do I think that Chris Martin did it to sort of look like he cares more than he does? Maybe.
Yeah, it's hard to tell.
But it's better that he does it than watching a band just get up there, play their song, and leave.
Right, yeah.
You know?
Like a band like Three Doors Down, we didn't know where they stood politically till now.
Yeah.
And
are they, I guess,
they played the
right wing.
I think they played the inauguration or something. They did something weird.
Yeah, I remember seeing a world premiere of their video at the movie theater, and it was it had soldiers in it. So,
yeah.
Like, that wasn't surprising if they were. But again, this could be, like, if you're as sort of down in the dumps in your career as Three Doors Down has to be, right?
Yeah, yeah.
They're going to pretty much take anything, I would think, that's going to sort of bring them back.
We talked about this on the Toby Keith episode, because we were putting the scenario of, would you take that gig? And it's like, no, I wouldn't.
No, of course you wouldn't. But you might think about it if you're Smash Mouth.
Yeah.
Because you've lost all equity that you had in the music business.
Uh-huh.
So I could see why, like, you know, like we see this all the time, even with comics, who at one time had such a market share, and now they're down to so little, they're desperate to find that back again. And sometimes they'll make a bad choice.
Yeah. Like, I heard that Tommy McNamara is so down the dumps, he's offering to suck people's dicks for a positive review on this podcast.
That's what I heard,
too. And I heard that about Tom Tokar, too.
At what age do you think that Tommy should have switched to Tom?
Oh, I think Tommy's a good name.
It's not, though. though. It's like a little kid.
I think it's good. I love it.
I'm sorry that you're on a gurney right now after getting jumped. But
he got jumped. We're very sad.
But I'm saying that like we still his parents should have called him Tom when he was like 10.
His parents are listeners to this podcast. They're our biggest supporters. I think
they think about it all the time. Where they're like, wow, we really should have named him an adult name. As
I think it's good. Well, they named him Thomas, and then he picked Tommy.
But he's not nine.
And if his name wasn't Tommy, then our show couldn't be called Tom and Tommy Comedy Mommy.
Oh my God.
At Caroline, September
27th.
Well,
Joe List. Here's some breaking news for you. If you wait long enough to buy your tickets, the show's going to end up being free anyway.
That's not true. That's not true. That was just the first one. Oh, what the hell? Is this... did I enter a roast battle? Is this Comedy Central? Oh my God, Jeff Ross's ugly ass just walked in.
There's only a handful of people in comedy, not that I'm in comedy, but you know what I mean, that I am better looking than, and he's one of them. My God, that's an ugly
dude.
Holy shit.
When I was in Montreal, because he was there too, somebody found him on Tinder and said that he was like 36.
Well, that can't be right, though.
No, it can't be right.
Well, I thought you were saying that he got this ugly that soon.
No.
Like, it doesn't make any sense.
No.
Man.
He seems like a
delightful
man.
God, we should do a whole podcast on how ugly certain comedians are, like, in the face. Because most of them are ugly, like, on the inside,
right,
of course.
Yeah,
but
a lot of them are, like Eliza.
Yeah,
What was I going to say? Before I forget, the Coldplay Houston thing. So they canceled their show in Houston. I was looking up their current news and stuff, and they had to cancel their show in Houston the other night. It was like 2 or 3 days ago, and people were kind of pissed. And then they did a show in Miami where they played a tribute song where they said, "We're going to play this once and only once, so bear with us," they said. And they played tribute to Houston, and it was like, it's a cool sentiment. I thought that was nice that they did that, but God, the song is bad. He starts it out with the first lyrics are, "I'm dreaming of when I get back to Houston. I'm dreaming of that very special place. I'm dreaming of when Houston has no problems in that city where they send you into space."
Oh my God.
Isn't that bad?
There's some really bad, like, I mean, we're in agreement that their lyrics are, at best, you're just like, I don't even know what he's talking about.
Maybe,
but at worst, because they have a Christmas song
I didn't even know that. My God,
it is just, I think the kid, like, dies in it or something. It's a Christmas song.
Yeah?
Yeah.
Sometimes
I think it's called Christmas Lights.
The kid had to die.
Christmas Lights. But I mean, seriously, I think the kid either is dead or dying in it.
Oh my God. Why would they do that?
I don't know.
Is it a real kid?
I don't know.
Rome
I doubt
kidnapped.
It. Christmas Lights. Yeah, I think it was part. I think that back in the day, they had like a fan club where you could only get it. It was like a 7-inch.
Oh, I remember that.
Yeah, I think
I don't. I don't think I got it because I don't really like Christmas music that much. But
What are you talking about?
I'm not a big Christmas music fan.
It's allowed. I have rules for
Halloween
everything.
Music.
Of course you do. Just Werewolves of London 24/7.
Wow.
But bull. I mean, I'm just saying that's definitely that and Monster Mash are the two. But I mean, I don't understand.
Wait, I was thinking of cemeteries in London when you just
Thanksgiving
said that.
Day. When you're
Love
trimming
Thanksgiving
your tree.
Music too.
Jeez.
What?
What is it?
It's all about cornucopias.
Well, anyway, my point is that like Christmas music is great on Thanksgiving Day when you're trimming your tree all the way through. I think it goes off Christmas Day.
Yeah, of course.
So the 26th, you can't listen to Christmas music.
No, that would be horrible.
Yeah. Are you going to go see Coco on Thanksgiving Day?
What's that?
That's a new Pixar movie.
Oh, I'm going to see it. Probably not on Thanksgiving Day. Is that when it comes out?
Yeah, it's a day. Well, it comes out, I think, Wednesday.
I like, what was the last Pixar movie that came out? Cars 3?
Yeah, I didn't see it.
Is that the last
it.
One? I haven't seen that.
That's the only film in that I never saw.
Ever?
Well, so Toy Story 1 was released, and I didn't see it when it first was released. But every movie since then I've seen, if not opening weekend, certainly within a few days of it opening.
Yeah.
Until Cars 3. And I hear Cars 3 actually, certainly what has to be better than Cars 2, of course.
I saw, I was at Fallon with Nate when Nikki did Fallon last.
Yeah.
Larry the Cable Guy was the panel guest.
Sure. Yeah.
And so he came and talked, and he was wearing cargo shorts on TV.
Oh, no.
That was, that's,
I'm looking through these little... just so we can, I just want to make sure that we didn't,
we're not missing anything blatant.
Because I feel like there was,
there was a couple, a lot of people don't like the name of the band, which I can't even,
it's not good.
Yeah, it's not. What did that mean? I used to know what Coldplay meant. It has like a dumb...
Well, what did you say in your intro that their original name was?
It was, fuck, I gotta look it up. It was like Pectorals or something like
Jesus.
That.
Jesus. Yeah, well, I mean, but that's the thing, Radiohead is a terrible band name.
Yeah, that's not great. You're right.
I mean, it's better than Coldplay, I suppose, but...
They're similar, though, too.
Right. I mean, it's just, it's not... Like, The Strokes, is that a great band name? It's fine. It's good enough. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's good enough to listen to them.
Yeah.
You know, like, Queen, for instance, is the best band name of all time.
Queen's a great band name.
And after that...
ABBA. Is that a good band name?
Yeah, sure.
It's not bad.
I don't mind it.
I mean, it's just the initials of the people or whatever. What's the worst band name you think that's ever happened?
Well, the worst band name of a band that I've ever actually listened to is a tie between Jimmy Eat World and Sunny Day Real Estate.
Yeah. You think Sunny Day Real Estate's bad?
Yes.
Why is that a bad band name?
It's just...
What's so bad about that?
It's just horrible.
It's no Limp Bizkit.
But I mean, no one listens... No one likes
Limp. No, you love Limp.
No, I do not.
You're a Bizkit
boy. I don't know
boy.
If I've ever... I mean, I'm sure I've heard them, but I'm not 100% sure what the songs are.
Mm-hmm.
Like, if I heard... Like, I'm sure
You know Roland, for sure. Roland.
Ooh, I like that. Wait, if that's what it sounds like, then I like it.
Yeah, that's good, right?
He just says rolling the whole time?
Rolling. Ah, keep rolling. He doesn't
you
say
remember,
that the whole time.
You know Bob and Tom co-host Josh Arnold?
Of course.
So, like, you know, Josh and I are good friends, and we like a lot of the same music.
Yeah.
And he went to see Korn. And I tweeted at him, like, this is not possible, and he didn't even acknowledge that I tweeted at him.
Yeah.
Korn. You know,
they made my favorite Thanksgiving
Korn
song.
He saw Korn live, in concert. They made
my favorite Thanksgiving song.
What is it?
Cornucopia.
Oh, my God.
They did. It's with a K.
Tommy's not here to make you feel like that's funny. That's the problem. That it's not, so...
I'm just saying they made it, you know. Korn, we're going to do a Korn
episode. He went to see Korn. He got in his car.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, before that, now he probably got free tickets because he's
on the radio. Yeah.
But
he
lives
in my radio.
He somehow had to figure out a way to either go online to buy the tickets or ask someone for free tickets.
Yeah.
He got in his car.
Uh-huh.
Drove to the venue.
How far was it in Indy?
Probably paid to park. I don't know.
Yeah.
Probably paid to park. Got out of his car, walked in with all the other people. Think about how infuriating the average person at a Korn show is.
Yeah.
And what, if for nothing else, what if you just happened to just ask them a political question, what the answer would be.
No, actually, I've heard, you mean the people going to see
Korn.
Okay, yeah, that's true.
Like, the people, right. Like, just imagine, like, somehow getting into a conversation with the average concert goer at a Korn concert.
Yeah.
Like what they like just mention Hillary Clinton and just see what happens.
Yeah.
And you know, so it's like there is a thing like to me when I do my portion of this podcast, the biggest problem with the bands that people get on here to defend are the fans. It's not the band usually.
Even people said that about Coldplay, which I think is crazy.
I mean, their fans are the most innocuous people.
Yeah, it's like there's no way you hate Coldplay fans. I just don't buy. I don't buy that. You don't even know
they're Coldplay. I know what they mean though. Just to sort of like, I hate to use this term, but to play devil's advocate here.
Oh boy.
But my point
here
is like they're talking about like a white mom who's shopping at like Bed Bath & Beyond. That's what they mean. So I understand why you would dislike the fans because they're not, they don't really like music. I think one of the things that I've noticed when I meet someone who's really into Coldplay is that they don't really like music.
Yeah.
Like they're not people, like this is just the one thing that resonated with them for some reason.
which does make it more difficult. I have to admit, even though I could absolutely care less about who likes most anything that I like, it is difficult for me to like bands with a fan base of terrible people. It's very similar to being a Cubs fan. The average Cubs fan is a piece of shit.
Yeah, that's the hardest part about living in Chicago and being a Cubs fan, because you run into these people.
But
this guy called my little brother when he was like maybe 14. We were walking down the street next to Wrigley, and we were at the game that was letting out, and this guy called my little brother a queer.
Jeez.
It was crazy.
Is he?
No. I wish.
Yeah.
Moving
on. Are you playing from your phone? You want me to do
No. No, I was looking at the albums because I was trying to remember back, because I don't know how soon you need to wrap up, but
no,
I want to talk about Coldplay some more.
We're good.
Because, like, X and Y is your favorite album from them.
Yes.
A lot of people hate that album and think that their first two are their best. I also love X and Y. X and Y is the album that really got me into them.
Yeah.
When Yellow came out, I thought it sucked. I was only listening to rap at that point. And I would listen to like only Tupac and like the angrier Eminem stuff. And like Coldplay sucks. And like I remember writing in one of my creative writing classes about how much I hated Coldplay. I was like one of those people. But it was like just out of stupid.
Right.
It didn't make any sense.
There are plenty of people that don't know what they're talking about that say that Coldplay is terrible. But there are enough people who do know what they're talking about that also say that they're the worst band. That's why it has been an issue over the years.
Because
for many of you in that time frame that there are people like, for instance, Brad Wilhelm, who I don't think he would say they're the worst band, but he actively hates them, and it just doesn't make sense.
Sure, especially given the stuff that he likes.
Yeah.
He likes dumb shit.
Yeah, well, I mean, he doesn't. He likes good music mostly, but I mean, there are bands that there's no way you could argue they're any better than Coldplay.
Like Cheap Trick.
Yeah, well, I like them both. So.
I don't have any opinion on them, really.
Yeah,
but,
yeah.
So I got into, when Fix You came out, that was like, because I know that their songs are sometimes the lyrics are very generic.
Right.
I listened to Fix You on my way to the club today, and I got emotional again.
It's very
emotional.
I was
at a place, I was like, you know what?
That's what it exists for, though. That's the thing, is that, like, imagine that Patch Adams was a good movie.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's the Cider House Rules, it's Patch Adams, it's supposed to elicit sadness, and you're supposed to, and they definitely know what they're doing.
Yeah.
They definitely know that again, we're talking about the 53-year-old white lady who hasn't listened to music the way that she used to for a long time.
Yeah.
And she just happens to hear that song, she weeps in the car, and that's who their fan base is. I get it.
Mm-hmm.
But that doesn't make it a bad song. It makes it more likely that it would be a bad song.
Sure.
I agree that to me, it is a check mark in the negative side that they are intentionally attempting to make you feel a certain way.
Yeah.
Because I feel like it should be a much more natural feel. Like when I'm listening to certain I'll be listening to, you know, jazz. And it's emotional.
Yeah.
Because you feel something through something that isn't necessarily, the average person might not hear that and feel a certain way about it. But like, you know, listening to like a Love Supreme or something like that, it's very emotional to listen to. So I feel like I can recognize that Fix You is intentionally supposed to make me feel a certain way, but it's still a good song.
Yeah, and it can do what it set out to do, which is like at some point, just because it's overdone. I found this, I looked up on Twitter, I was looking up Coldplay hate because I knew that there would
be
some.
It's there.
And
what were your key... your keyword was Coldplay plus what?
Gay.
Oh, no.
Well, because I wanted to see if people were still tweeting, you know how you know you're gay? Because you listen to Coldplay
I heard you say that on one of the podcasts where you said that was a thing from a movie.
That's from 40-Year-Old Virgin.
I just don't remember that. When you said that, I was like, oh, I didn't realize
that. Was
that
like
was
a big moment. And
wow.
Like, there's that back and forth between Paul Rudd and I think Seth Rogen.
It is so weird when you get directors and actors who you know are politically progressive,
uh-huh.
and they still do things like that in their movies. Yeah. Because we all know, watching Judd Apatow's Twitter, or he's an extremely political guy on the right side of everything.
Very progressive, but this was 2006.
Yeah, I know.
People were still calling things gay.
Ah, it's so weird, though.
It's very weird. You know, I still hear people say it here and there, but...
Are they on the soundtrack? Is that what happened?
No. So what it is, it's the scene where they're playing video games, and it's just them. It's them trying to show two guys just like how
they're
they
playing
interact.
NHL.
I can't remember what
I think it is.
You think it's NHL?
I'm pretty sure.
I think you're right.
Yeah.
I think you're right.
Because one
NHL.
Of them gets pancaked.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think you're right. Let's fact check that later.
Yeah, that's good.
It'd be funny if it wasn't even close.
I know. Right? They're like playing like a World of Warcraft.
But yeah, they're doing that back and forth. You know how I know you're gay.
You do this.
And then Coldplay is one of them. And that's the line that I remember being in the theater and it getting a big laugh. And I was like, well,
that sucks.
Because I was like, I think that point I was getting into Coldplay. Because I got into Coldplay. I think I've told this on the podcast before, but it might be on just Alex Stone's episode. I got into them because I liked that Fix You song. I bought the video on my very first iPod video.
Oh, wow.
I had the iPod video that was like a Christmas present one year,
sure.
And it was like, changed my life.
Oh, absolutely.
I bought Green Day's Wake Me Up When September Ends.
I
bought Fix You by Coldplay, the music videos. And I was at a little get together.
I don't know that I've ever seen a Coldplay music video before.
That video, The Scientist?
I don't think I've ever seen any.
The Scientist is a great video.
I mean, who was watching MTV still?
I'm not a big video person now. Yeah. I watched the only videos I've watched recently were the Kesha ones that just came out, but they're powerful. But I watched, that was when I was into music videos still.
Yeah,
I remember seeing the Yellow video so many times, and I hated it because
you've seen Thriller, right?
Yeah.
All right, well, then you don't need to watch any other videos.
Thriller's fine. No, I'm just kidding.
Oh, man, it was okay. Yeah, if they made a top 10 videos of all time, it would be like seven Michael Jackson videos.
That's a Halloween song.
Yeah, it is.
It's spooky.
I mean, it would be like seven Michael Jackson videos.
Yeah.
Metallica 1, Peter Gabriel Sledgehammer, and Aha, Take On Me, and maybe Genesis Land of Confusion.
What about that OK Go video where they're jumping on treadmills?
Is that band that you guys were talking about that you were going to do on the podcast that got a zero on Pitchfork? Is that
that's Jet. Jet got a zero. We've talked about this a couple times, but the review is literally just a video.
OK Go is one of those same bands, though, that came out around that same time.
Yeah.
It's like, all right.
That video,
a dumb name.
It's just a video of a monkey peeing in its own mouth,
yeah,
Jared. That's the funniest thing that Pitchfork's ever done.
Oh, man.
Anyway.
But no, I remember that. Yeah, they're like on a treadmill, or they're like a bunch of people on like a treadmill.
They had that
something.
One hit. I can't even remember the song. I just remember.
Here it goes, here it goes again.
Oh,
and it's that song.
No, I don't.
That's not right.
I don't know if that's right. Maybe.
That's that band. It might not be that video.
The thing I was gonna read. So I googled Coldplay gay or whatever.
Yeah.
This tweet is "Fix You" by Coldplay just came on shuffle, and I like burst out in tears. This song is over-dramatic, lame, and gay. IDK, what's wrong with me?
Oh, my God.
They're self-aware enough.
People
to
are still using it
cry.
As like a cut-down.
Yeah, it's so stupid. But yeah, so I got into them because I was into that, and this girl at a party was like, oh, you have Fix You in here. I love Coldplay. And I had a crush on her, and I went and downloaded every Coldplay song on LimeWire.
You went down... loaded all of the songs. I thought you were going to say ended up having sex with her.
No. No, she's a Christian lady.
Why did you Oh, well.
She's married
lady,
now.
Lady, huh?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
Lady.
Anyway, so you went to LimeWire, yeah.
Went to LimeWire, and I loved... I got so into them, because then I also liked... there's a single off of... I liked the song from Garden State. Don't Panic.
What's
I loved
the comedian-aged, cut off of knowing what LimeWire is? Megan Gailey.
Wait, what do you mean? Like how old?
Like
you have to be
she or? Might not know.
No, she would know. She's my age.
Oh, she is.
I think she's like exactly my age. Yeah. I think,
just trying to think of like of people that we know.
Yeah, like Jordan you think Mitchell probably wouldn't knows. Know. Yeah, I think Mitchell knows. Mitchell's soul knows.
You know? That's true.
Mitchell
That's a good
will
point.
Be on the podcast in the next
soul.
Couple eps, so you'll know who he is soon enough. He's
anyway,
my
yeah,
boy.
It's just such a weird like.
Yeah.
I mean, of course, Napster.
That time is
everyone
over.
Has at least heard of Napster.
Sure,
but Kazaa was the next thing.
Kazaa and LimeWire were the next things,
sure.
And you would look up a song on LimeWire. Try to download it. It would turn out to be a video of people having sex
half the time. Right.
And you'd have to delete it from your computer before your mom saw it. But, I downloaded all that. I got really into the singles. But then I was listening to album by album. And they were one of the first bands that I listened to every album completely. Because before then, it was hard to get out. You had to buy the whole damn album.
Yeah, sure.
I didn't like deep cuts half the time. I was like, play me the radio hits.
The first time that I ever had any sort of music service where I didn't actually pay full price.
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, I used to work in the music business.
Yeah.
Quote unquote.
Yeah.
I mean, I ran record stores and then I sold music to stores from a distro. But my point is that really it's Tidal.
Really?
Because, I mean, I had...
Why?
I had, so...
Why Tidal over Spotify?
Well, hold on a second. So what I'm saying is, like, because even when I had iTunes, you're still paying for
sure.
it, right?
Yeah.
So I decided on Tidal because I felt, well, for two reasons. One, you can get the files at a higher quality.
Oh,
and
I heard that.
That's so, funny. Like, most of the places that I'm listening to music, my speakers are fairly good, and so I like... to be as, you know, nice as it can be.
Yeah.
It's $20 a month for that instead of 10.
Uh-huh.
And then, but also, and this probably is either changed or needs to be updated, but at the time that I made my decision, they were paying the artist the best.
Oh,
and that doesn't matter for someone like Coldplay.
Right.
But it matters for
a lot
of other bands.
To.
Like even a band like War on Drugs, when I'm streaming their album, like they don't work at a gas station, but they're not as far away from that as you would think.
Yeah.
Because touring with like the thing, one of the things that is interesting to me about comedy is that I used to book bands, and that was a thing that I did mostly up until really all I did as far as entertainment until the club opened. And you know, it's really hard to ever become a paid comic. We all know
that.
Oh,
absolutely.
It's really hard. I mean, we're talking maybe top 1% right there. That of every 100 people that try an open mic, you have one that actually gets paid by a legitimate venue to do comedy. Maybe it's more like 2 or 3 of 100.
Yeah,
but my point
I would
is,
say it's maybe a little. But it's like, but
not it's
a
hard.
Lot. And to get to where it's a living is a completely different number.
But when you get to that point, when you're at the point of selling enough tickets that you can quit a job and only live off of comedy.
Yeah.
The per person amount of money that you make is so substantially higher than a band because there's only one of you.
Sure, absolutely.
So you tour, you don't need a van, you can fly in, someone will pick you up most of the time. I mean, it really is a much different, like a band like War on Drugs or The National or other bands that are like very successful bands are taking home probably what I pay like an average comedian per person. Now, of course, it's more total, but when you have to split
person.
The pie up, the drummer of The National is probably making what I paid to Tiffany Haddish for one show.
Right.
And like no one would ever think that because it's, you know, you would think that they would be making so much money. They're playing like stadiums.
Sure.
And stuff.
Yeah.
So it really, because you have so many different ways you have to split the pie up, that's how this happens.
Uh-huh. Yeah. No, that makes total sense. And that's why, I think that's why, we've talked about this a little bit on the podcast, that's why selling out is kind of not as big of a thing anymore.
It's
like
just
if
not
you do
a
commercial,
anymore.
People are like, oh, cool. I'm glad that band I like got a commercial because that means they're making money now.
Right. And I mean, a lot of it, like there's actually a couple of articles about the War on Drugs, for instance, where them signing to a major label in comparison to, say, Jawbreaker when they decided to go to Geffen is such a different thing because basically in reading an interview with the War on Drugs, Adam basically did the whole band, at least songwriting wise, they didn't change a thing. Whereas when you sign to a major label, when Green Day you know, I know we say Rancid wasn't on a major label, but my point is they still,
yeah,
they were going to have things available to them that they would not normally have.
Uh-huh.
Whereas, you know, Secretly Canadian, when War on Drugs were on that label, they were providing them fairly close to the same thing that they're going to get from their major label,
yeah,
in recording. And a major label's not going to sit there over your shoulder like they used to and say, we need a hit.
Right.
You and they signed know the that's War on Drugs for a reason.
Yeah, they know that's not what they signed on for.
Right. They're not a hits-driven band. Now, there are songs on there that could be played on the radio, of course.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Yeah. What was I about to fucking say? I lost it. That's fair. So Tidal, LimeWire. Oh, yeah. So we were talking about LimeWire.
Yeah.
That's I got so into those songs. I got really into X and Y. I was listening to for an entire summer. That was all I listened to. And I made a book of poetry called Swallowed in the Sea, based on how much I loved them. And it was lame as hell. But I loved them so much that I went back and bought the albums because I was like, I just like it too much. I bought the CDs from like Best Buy as I found them.
Tiffany Haddish brought someone on stage to read a poem the other night, and it was the lowest point in the history of the Comedy Attic.
Wait, why did that happen?
I don't know.
Did she know the person?
No.
What?
I don't
know.
Was
it from crowd work or
something?
That's
what I mean. It's poetry. It's like, it's got to be the worst thing that has ever existed in the world.
One time I wrote, when I was in high school, I got invited to Borders to read a poem. The Borders over by the mall.
Yeah.
They used to have a poetry reading night, and because I was in like 10th or 11th grade or something, I submitted a poem about basketball.
Oh my
God. They had me read it at this very serious poetry reading.
Right.
I went up and read this fucking poem about basketball that was just like supposed to be stupid, but everybody else was like, I didn't realize they just invited everybody who did the poems for the class to do it. So I looked like a real dumbass.
Was that guy that dressed all wild there that night? You remember there was a one guy at Borders that would wear like a striped shirt? Like,
he
if you
probably
know,
was
never
there.
Mind,
I don't remember
it.
Him.
I thought you'd know who I mean.
No, anyway, I don't think I know him.
Found out later that he's a Republican.
Oh, boy.
It's like, God, it's one of those things.
An R word.
Yeah, boy, that's bad.
The new R word.
That's the single worst thing you can be.
Say, some of our listeners are going to be pretty pissed when they hear that.
Fine.
That's why we don't take a side.
Please do not come to see a show at the Comedy Attic then. Please don't.
We don't take sides over here.
Yes,
we welcome all.
Yeah, no, we don't.
We think both sides were bad.
Oh, my God. Fuck me. Holy shit, man. Like, imagine just sitting here and that's what you really believe. Like, no, you know what?
Hey,
I think that, oh, fuck
me. I don't think Trump's so great. But neither is she.
Oh, my God.
Why is it that those people who say that, they always voted for Trump? It's always like,
right, like
if
why
they're the same, then vote for the other one.
Right. Then, you know? Because they're lying, Tom. Yeah. That's the problem. Is that the whole problem is that they're either dumb as fuck or they're lying, one or the other.
I think they're always lying. It's like, well, at least. All right, I guess we should talk about the playlist here.
Yeah.
We should get into this music. We're already an hour in here.
You got to do in the order because I have a reason. I have sort
okay.
of like
do you want to do on yours since we got the thing?
You want to go? You want
to? Yeah, I'll go up to it. Well,
all right, I'll turn it down a little bit because I know that was loud.
I can't. It's hard to tell.
I intentionally wanted the other one to be loud.
Because you were trying to annoy people.
Okay, so we're going to start out with Sparks.
Okay.
Woo! Bass heavy. It's probably that hockey stick. If you pull that hockey stick off. Yeah. There's a Jonathan Tays hockey stick up there. Yeah. Well, so can I tell the story while it's on?
Yeah.
Or do I wait? I can't remember.
No, you don't have to wait. You can talk.
So this song is on here very specifically because when I first met Dana, we were so poor, and we were living in my apartment in Baton Rouge, and she bought me an alarm clock that had a CD player in it. And it was like, honestly, at the time, this was like getting a Ferrari. I mean, it was like, that's how important it was to us that we did it. But she bought it, even though I was her boss. She had more money than I did from working. She waited tables at Chili's. Well, anyway, so you could play a CD to wake up to. And we would always wake up to this album. And this song specifically was what we set it to mostly. And it just, you know, hearing this song, it brings back, I mean, you know, she was 21. I was 20, I don't know, however old I was when we first met. So 24, I guess. You know, I had been through a divorce. And, you know, we met at a time in my life that would have been really bad if I didn't meet her, honestly. I mean, I was just in a really bad place. And so this song has, and much like we've made fun of them for, has a very sentimental thing for me. So,
man, that's a banger.
Yeah, it is.
And a great story to accompany it.
Yeah. Do you want me to just go to the next one?
Maybe pause it, because then we'll just talk about it for a
sure.
sec. Yeah, that one is definitely a song that hit me hard. It's right up my alley. I'm like, right. I was like a little romantic boy, and right. I got engaged when I was 21 too. Like, 21 or 22. And
we remember.
Oh,
yeah.
Pepperidge Farm remembers.
Yeah,
that was original.
Honestly, for those of you that have met Tom later in life, that was a really fucking emotional thing to watch him go through, and it was really hard. Because, you know, he's someone, and I said this to him last night in a text message, but I mean, you know, Tom honestly is like either a younger brother or a son to me in a lot of ways. And that was really, really rough. And we all made fun of him for it, of course. But my point is that, yeah, like, we didn't right away. This was the immediate aftermath. It was very fucked up.
Yeah, that was a tough time. But, you know, with my father, Jared, by my side.
My father slash older brother, Jared, by my side.
Yeah, but I just remember this song specifically. I just loved it. It was right up my alley. And fun fact about this song, in the film Wedding Crashers, which is weird because there's like a sentimental aspect to Wedding Crashers, yeah, where there's like they're really trying to build up Owen Wilson and what's her name, Rachel McAdams,
yeah,
is she in that? Their love story, and there's like a pivotal scene with that where that song's in there, and you're like, oh
yeah,
song carries the love story, I think, in that movie. It's
the
so
thing
good.
Of it is for the first album by Coldplay, where it's like basically that riff, mm-hmm, for 45 minutes.
Yeah.
Every song is at that same pace, and it's just beautiful. And there's,
yeah,
not a whole lot of instrumentation. It's it's like, to me, there's a razor thin line between a band like Coldplay and Death Cab for Cutie, where,
yeah,
those songs sound great to me.
Mm-hmm.
And a band like Owl City or like Jack Johnson.
Oh, absolutely, yeah.
Where it's like all of the, to me, all of the heart and soul is ripped from it, and it sounds like it was, you know, just created in a studio.
Yeah.
Like Owl City is like, there's no way that you couldn't walk into a store who was playing Owl City and think maybe it's Ben Gibbard singing. It's possible that you think that, right?
Yeah.
But then you hear it and you're like, how soft have they gotten that this is. Because, like, to me, a bit, like, I know I'm going all over the place.
No, it's
like,
fine. Yeah,
for instance, the Gin Blossoms are a great example of a band that if they had the producer of the Coldplay records or,
yeah,
the War on Drugs records or any, or, you know, like the National, any bands that, like, when you strip down the people, they're all very similar people. The people in the Gin Blossoms probably grew up listening to Led Zeppelin and listening,
yeah,
to. But they got caught up in the wrong time.
Mm-hmm.
Example is Bryan Adams.
Yeah.
Where if they would have been given a producer that actually knew what good music it sounds like in a studio,
yeah,
not like Muzak sounding music.
Uh-huh.
Like, that's the thing about, like someone mentioned that, I think.
Uh-huh.
Coldplay, that it was like elevator music or,
yeah,
music. And to me,
yeah,
that's definitely not true on
no
these first
absolutely
few
not definitely
you can
not
hear a guitar, you can hear it just feels emotional to me.
Yeah.
But not the way you mentioned Fix You, which is where they first started to sort of play on. Or I should say prey on you with that.
Yeah, that's the first one where it definitely feels like they want you to feel this way. These ones, it's like, they're just kind of sweet, like, sentimental. Like, they are sentimental and sweet, but it's like, the lyrics are broad enough to fit what you're feeling as opposed to, like...
Right. And, I mean, I'm sure that they probably hate playing Yellow live.
Yeah. I wonder if they still play Yellow.
I think they have to.
I saw them live, and I can't remember
if they
played Yellow.
That's probably still their biggest hit that they ever had, I would say.
Yeah, I feel like it's between that and Clocks or Speed of Sound.
Yeah, yeah. Well, Speed of Sound, I don't know.
Is that not a big... I thought that was a huge hit. So. My stepdad liked that song. I mean, that's how big it got.
Jeez.
I know, it's crazy.
Old squirrel murderer.
I wish we had pet squirrels.
All right, so what? Here, let's go In My Place.
Okay.
And I have this on here. To me, this song in particular is... They took over the world on this song. This might not be their biggest hit, but to me, this was the moment where I felt like I looked myself in the mirror and I said, "You like a band that everyone likes." But this song is too good for me to have turned my back on them for this this album is great.
I think this is the best album, personally.
Well, I mean, this argument between what my favorite or best album is, the first three albums are sort of, to me, interchangeable. When I heard this song the first time, I remember I got an advanced copy of this album, and I heard this song, and I was just like, this has to be what it was like to be a Beatles fan when the Beatles were a band. I don't mean... I'm certainly not comparing the two bands. My point is...
No,
is
you
that,
did.
But my point is that I've never in my life actively liked a current band who is popular to society. Like, because when I first started listening to Radiohead, they were already three albums in. So I didn't listen to the Bends when it was released. I came on to Radiohead right around the end era of OK Computer. So they were already popular by the time I listened to them. But I never obviously didn't listen to Fleetwood Mac or Led Zeppelin or any of the other bands that I love while they were around. So
I was into Fleetwood Mac when they started.
Yeah, sure you did. But, like, you know what I mean? Like, I was always behind. I never, like, one of my favorite bands in history now is R.E.M., but I never liked them when they were popular. I disliked them while they were popular, and it's revisionist history. I think they get it. They've heard this song. But what I mean is, like, it's, you know, to me, very similar to my famous story of, you know, my favorite band in high school and college was Jawbreaker.
Uh-huh.
And when Dear You was released, I was boycotting the band because they signed to a major label.
Mm-hmm.
I went the midnight release of that, and there was a live Nirvana record that were released that same night.
Yeah.
I went just to, like, see what was going on. It was the record store that I went to as a kid in college was CD Alley in Greenville, North Carolina. It was maybe the best record store I've ever gone to.
Mm-hmm.
And I just went just to see the spectacle of it. But I had to wait. This is how stupid that I was. I had to wait until someone traded it in to buy it because I didn't want to buy. I would only agree to buy it secondhand.
Yeah.
And of course they toured on that album and I didn't go because I wasn't going to support them. And
yeah,
it's the stupidest thing I've ever done. Maybe ever because they were my favorite band. I never saw them live.
Yeah. That's wild.
Yeah.
Really quickly, I texted you this yesterday because I think I just said that because Fix You was the first song that I was like, I'm going to buy things from them.
Right.
But that's the song because I hated Yellow when it first came out.
Sure.
Now I love it. But at the time I was like, Yellow sucks. it's for fucking people who are gay.
Like, oh my God.
That's right.
You heard
I probably was one of those people. I don't know.
Right.
But I hated it. I thought it was soft. And then that song, I remember, came on to like VH1 or whatever. And I was like, now this, I can't deny.
Right.
It's a great song.
Well, I mean, again, saying all of the things, and I'm not speaking for you, but for me, I still understand if you have an inarguable palette for music,
mm-hmm.
and you hear that song and you just simply don't like the way that it sounds, I think that's fair.
Uh-huh.
I really do. I don't believe you if you say, I don't like Hall & Oates or Journey. Of course you do.
Right,
everyone does.
Right,
everyone,
sure. Something
if
at least.
If Journey comes on the radio, I don't care who you are. You're not going to turn it off. You're just not going to.
Yeah.
You're lying through your teeth if you say that.
Do you mean
would.
Don't Stop Believing?
I mean,
that's the one exception. I think people will turn that off.
I think
off.
Will in the Sky. I mean, I think there's a
Will
bunch
in the Sky
of
is great. I think,
great songs.
Lights is like incredible.
I mean, I'm just saying that like there. I don't think that you should wear the shirt or you would even buy an album. But if it comes on the radio, you know the words and you're going to sing to it. And
yeah.
Again, that's not every Journey song, not every Hall & Oates song. But I could understand. Too much time had passed for someone who was alive when Led Zeppelin was touring,
yeah,
to then hear Coldplay, for me not to think that there's a chance that I could believe them, that they don't like them.
Uh-huh.
I'd firmly believe that someone that saw Zeppelin or Jimi Hendrix in concert would also like Journey. I
uh-huh.
definitely believe that they're lying if they say that they
yeah.
don't. Now the reason that I have two tracks from X and Y,
mm-hmm.
and part of the reason is, we talked about this earlier, is that I feel like the X and Y is Coldplay being able to sit down and say, who are we?
Uh-huh.
Like, what are we as a band? Because I think that the first album was just what they thought they sounded like, and it was a great album,
mm-hmm.
and that's just what came out when they wrote the songs.
Yeah.
The second album was them saying, hey, people seem to be really into the emotional side of what we do.
Yeah.
But what do we like? And as has been noted by a lot of the people on your Facebook posts,
yeah.
the answer to that question is you too.
Oh, this is White Shadows, by the way.
And it's absolutely, unquestionably, Where the Streets Have No Name. I mean, it's U2 at their height, for sure. But see, they take the like emotional stuff here. Talks about being a young kid. But where it comes back to me is this is the quintessential Coldplay galloping through the forest song, because the beat that comes on here is exactly what I'm looking for when I listen to music, is this riff and beat right here that comes up right here. Like, that's exactly like what I envision when I'm thinking about music that I like. It has this rhythm to it.
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
And now again, right, I love how they pull out of that into this. Like, this beat right here is wonderful. And I mean, I personally I love his voice, and so these things all
yeah.
excite me in the right way. Like, I love the music. I can ignore the lyrics. But then you get, here's Chris Martin's portion of the band is the chorus here. Someone in the background whistling or whatever, that just going, ooh. So good. People hate that when he does that. Man,
that's great.
So good.
I should note, because I know we talk about like the lyrics are stupid sometimes. I think that I don't think they're bad. I think that they maybe they're vague, but you can apply them to whatever. I was reading the Harry Potter franchise to this album.
Yeah.
Like I would listen to it on a loop while I read that book, and it lines up perfectly.
Yeah.
It's like Dark Side of the Moon, and
right.
It's the music feels like that, and the galloping
playing
thing.
Dark Side of the Moon over Birth of a Nation. I understand.
Yep, it lines up.
Yeah.
I think that this song and Talk are a little similar, and I like Talk a little bit more, but I love this song too.
Well, I think White Shadows is the best song that they ever did. And I personally feel like that because it's weird because Spoon is another one of my favorite bands,
uh-huh.
and they have had a couple albums that were kind of lacking. But
yeah.
there's like a singular song off of each of them where I'm like, this is exactly what I wish they sounded like on every song.
Yeah.
And it's that pacing that I wish that Coldplay would have settled on.
Mm-hmm.
And as we'll get to over the next couple songs, they mm-hmm. didn't. They decided to go in a different direction.
Yeah.
Now, this is Speed of Sound, which is probably the hit off of this album, I guess.
I think that this and Fix You were the two major singles.
Fix You was on the White album.
Fix You is on X and Y.
It is?
Yep.
Oh, man. I thought it was on the one that we just played. I say the White album. I didn't mean the Beatles. I meant the... What's it called? Right. Boy, I was thinking Fix You was on Rush of Blood. This is... to me... White Shadow and Speed of Sound are the best 1-2 punch on any of their albums. Like, this is definitely the best, second best song on any of their albums, in my opinion. In fact, this might be my favorite chorus of any of their songs. But very similar. Again, it's a slower song, but it's definitely that same galloping through the forest feel. Like a dude getting ready for battle. He's listening to this. You know, like he's got his sword on one side.
Think of somebody getting ready for battle.
Yeah, listening to Coldplay.
I'm about to murder men.
They probably would be listening to AC/DC or Metallica, but in my mind, this is what they're listening to. Hold on, let's let it get to the chorus at least. All that noise and all that sound. So good. Man, all right, so yeah,
that's great.
I mean, it's you know, again, I feel like that this is I already mentioned the Beatles, like as if I was trying to, you know, but my point is that I feel like that this is the story behind this album for me. I don't even know what the real story is.
Yeah.
But to me, this is a band that was the album where they decided on what they were going to sound like as a band. And I really wish that they would have stuck to it because of course, as we're getting ready to move into, Life in Technicolor leads off.
Yeah, Viva La Vida slash and Prospector's March. Right,
but so the version that I have here is Life is like when they add lyrics.
Yeah,
and I love both versions of this song.
Yeah,
but I feel like that when they added the lyrics, it really, it just became a much, you know, like to me, this is a very valid, like this album and the EP. Mm-hmm. are a very valid next step after X and Y.
Yeah.
And this album and the EP both are, to me, as good as any of the first four albums. Like, I feel like that you can kind of interchange any of them in order. Whereas, like, a band like Arcade Fire would make a great album, and then they'd sort of fall back a little bit on their next album. I feel like the Coldplay, not as good of a band, I don't believe, but they didn't do that. They said their first four albums were all good, and then that's where we see kind of a fall here. But this is someone who's listening to this and maybe didn't know these songs. They're probably like, yeah, this sounds just like the last song. But see, that's what I like. I like when they did this sort of like...
I feel like this sounds completely different than
the last
album.
But it's like very, it's stadium feeling. Like, it's like they're... It's... They're positioning themselves as, we could play... We could do six nights in a row at Wembley Stadium and sell all the tickets.
Wembley.
And, yeah. And they probably could have done that, or maybe still could. I just think that this added so much to this when they decided to put the lyrics in.
I go back and forth on which version I like.
Yeah. Well, and I mean, again, this is where Chris Martin made his money for me, and what I like about him is the chorus. Like, he's able, and a lot of people can do this, but he creates hooks with his voice, and that's not easy to do. A lot of people can't do that. So yeah, I mean, that to me is with the next album, with Viva La Vida, mm-hmm. they were able to still make, like, there was still life left.
Uh-huh.
But I feel like that Lost, the song Lost,
mm-hmm.
is a really good representation of you started, I didn't realize it at the time,
uh-huh.
but you start to see... what's coming
mm-hmm.
in the songs. And I think I was like in denial at the time that they were getting ready to make, they were going to take the things about this song that I don't really like.
Uh-huh.
And that's what they were going to become as a band, were the things that you're going to hear in Lost that are mm-hmm. maybe not necessarily what I like are mm-hmm. what they became. Like, just adding that clapping was sort of a sea change for their music. And the pacing of this song, I feel like that this is what we ended up with like Milo Zailato and the Blue Album, whatever it's called. And I think they even have an album since then.
Have like a newer album out. They have that single that's like on all the time now.
Yeah, and I didn't even recognize that it was them when I heard that song, because they played it at the Super Bowl, or they played a song, maybe not the one you're talking about, but they played another song from the Super Bowl or on the Super Bowl that was I was like, this is Coldplay? Like, I didn't even know it was them. I don't know. See, like, this is like hanging by a thread for me. Like, I'm nostalgic about it because it reminds me of the first four albums, but it's not. It isn't what I'm looking for. Maybe it's this song. This is the song we were talking about from the Super Bowl.
Uh-huh.
Let's see. No.
That was at the Super Bowl, I think,
no.
Wasn't it?
Maybe it's this one. This is it. Like, I heard this song on the radio just around a couple times, and I was like, you could have told me it was anything. I never would have guessed it was them.
And they used this song to promote their Super Bowl appearance.
Yeah, yeah.
It's weird they're using a non-Coldplay song.
No, this is Coldplay. Oh, I see what you're saying. You thought it would be weird that they were... I mean, this is just... I don't know. What? Slipknot? Daft Punk. Yeah, like
it's
they want...
like Daft Punk-y
sure.
or something?
Yeah, it's up there. That's what you're talking about. That mask up there. Anyway, so this is what they ended up sounding like. And this is exactly... So part of what... And again, I'm going to lose... Like, look, I get... Just don't send Tom any hate mail. But when they released the EP... So when they released Prospector's March... Or Prospects March,
yeah.
which was the EP after Viva La Vida. They released Lost, so mm-hmm. this song. And hold on, here I'll go. Here it is. But this is, I remember listening to this, and I was like, what's happening right here? Oh, shit.
Are you trying to find the Jay-Z one?
Yeah.
I think that... Ain't
even half what they might do. Don't believe me. Like, it reminded me of the Jay-Z with Linkin Park record, where I'm just like, we've already done this before.
Uh-huh.
Anyway, it just, it's, to me, as racist or as embarrassing as a white person as this is, like, that was, to me, that was a signal towards me that maybe we were headed in a direction that I wasn't going to be a part of. If that makes sense.
Yeah.
Because I'm not interested in listening to Jay-Z. I'm just not.
Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing against him. I'm just saying that, like, it's not, I'm not going to listen to Jay-Z. I'm just not going to.
For me, to offer a different perspective, because I liked Jay-Z. I liked Kanye more, and Kanye and Jay-Z both worked with Coldplay.
Yeah.
And for me, I was like, I don't, it's not that I hate this. It's just that I go to these two things for different reasons. And I don't,
right.
It's not like I want, right. I liked that song. I really liked the remix. I would listen to it, but I liked both of those things separately also.
It feels like, desperate to me in a certain way. And what I mean by that is that even though certainly Jay-Z and probably Kanye are older than Coldplay in age. I know for sure that Jay-Z is.
Jay-Z for sure is.
But
I don't
I'm
know if Kanye is older than
Chris Martin.
It feels
like the type of thing that someone does for credibility.
Uh-huh.
And we all know, no matter how famous that Coldplay is,
uh-huh.
it's Coldplay looking for credibility, not Jay-Z
sure.
or Kanye looking for credibility.
Well, what's funny is I think Kanye approached Coldplay first.
I'm sure he did, but my point
but it
is,
helped
is that,
them
like,
in a, that way.
In the math problem of who's benefiting from this,
yeah,
you know, Chris Martin and Coldplay are for
definitely.
Sure benefiting more
absolutely.
Than, you know.
Yeah, I think you're right.
There's
because
not a whole lot that Kanye can do to raise his star.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think Chris Martin is... For all that he's, I think he definitely wants to be cool, and he just can't do it. Like
right.
at that Super Bowl halftime show, I liked what they did. That was
because we liked the songs.
Honestly,
that
moment is when I decided that this podcast is going to happen because I was so annoyed.
That's fine, but...
that was when I decided this is going to happen because I was getting so pissed at all these people acting
right.
like this was the worst thing that had
ever
happened to them.
I tweeted a couple things myself about this exact point that I got across earlier in the podcast.
Yeah,
I tweeted during the Super Bowl because it's just I like it. It's one of those things where it's like if you talk to a poor person who voted for Donald Trump, I just don't believe you that you think that he cares about you.
Yeah,
there's no fucking way in the world that you think that he would want to spend one millisecond in your presence.
But then again, what about Hillary?
Right. I know.
Or Killary,
well,
I should
what
say.
Well, what was the alternative, Tom?
Her name rhymed with Killary, Jared.
Geez. But point being that, like, people, it's like, and again, you made a great point at the beginning. This is how I live.
Yeah.
Is by black and white hyperbole overreacting to things, saying it's the best or worst.
Uh-huh.
But even I know that, like, for instance, I don't like Kiss.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like Jimi Hendrix. I don't like Bob Dylan.
Yeah, wow.
But I'm not, but there is still, in not liking those things, there is still levels to how bad that something is.
Yeah.
And Coldplay, under no circumstances, should ever be on anyone's list of the worst anything.
Mm-hmm.
Because even that shit that we just listened to at the end, you could just ignore it.
Yeah.
Just don't pay attention to it.
Yeah.
How is that worse than something that you can't, like if Slipknot came on?
Yeah, you would notice it. And Kiss just, too, I think. I think Kiss is in your face too.
On your person.
Yeah.
You know?
Before I forget, because you said that thing about the 1-2 punch of those two songs, I would say, and then part of the reason I like Rush of Blood the most is, I mean, it's got Clocks, but The Scientist and Warning Sign. Warning Sign is my favorite Coldplay song.
Yeah,
I think it's
great.
Different from a lot of stuff they do.
I really was trying to go for like a timeline more than anything
else.
Sure,
no. I liked the way that you did it. I liked the
build to it. And I felt like that pulling only one song off of that album was a good idea because to me, that's where they sort of like took over the world.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, like, that song specifically, that was a great choice. And it's one that I forget about, and partially because it's so short. It's like a short song compared to the rest of that album.
Right.
Because some of those tracks are like 6 minutes long. Like, Politic is really long.
Let me ask you this, because you seem to have gotten into Coldplay after I did. However, you are from a generation younger than mine. So I wonder, do you think that there were people who claim this Coldplay's the worst band during the first album?
I think Yellow was very in your face at that time. That's why I didn't like them. Because I was like, I'm hearing this fucking song all the time.
Right.
The stars are yellow. Fuck off. Like, it wasn't cool to me. So it was in your face. So there were people bitching about it then.
I mean, it's embarrassing to be at a concert when that song is played. There's no other way around it. Because it's just, but see, that's the thing.
I like it now, though. I'll admit it. I like it now.
I mean, I look at it, like, again, when we're talking about certain things, I would, like, I don't care how many people like the Cubs. I don't care how many people like War on Drugs.
Yeah.
And I don't care how many people liked Coldplay at that time. To me, it sounded good. I liked it. It was something that I liked.
Yeah.
And I'm never going to let someone, like, even though it's uncomfortable to be a fan of something that the average fan is a piece of shit.
Yeah.
If you like something enough, and this more stands for the Cubs,
right,
you don't really, it doesn't phase you.
Yeah.
Like, I know what I believe about the Cubs, and I know how long I've been paying attention and the amount of time I've spent with them.
Yeah.
And I'm not going to let someone who would otherwise be a Reds fan, if they were good, ruin that.
Sure.
You know? But it is no different than being embarrassed by the bleachers at Wrigley Field, watching people react to when Yellow comes on at a concert. It's embarrassing. It's like Sweet Caroline.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, people are singing along. Like, they got their lighters out and shit.
White people dancing. It's real bad for everyone.
Yeah, it's not good. And it's like swaying too, which is not good.
I mean, we've covered this just in my voicemails that white people have ruined everything. You know that.
We have.
What haven't we ruined?
I will say, it's been pointed out that most of your criticisms about bands are that they're very white, but then the things you enjoy are also very white.
Yeah, for sure. Oh, absolutely. I mean, I'm getting ready to say this. This is true. White people have even basically taken over jazz.
Yeah.
Like, what I mean by that is that the average person who's listening to, you know, Miles Davis or Coltrane is a white dude my age.
And it's like, there's like a level of like, you're able to find, because I've done this, I got into jazz for a while. I haven't been listening lately, but there was a period where I was really into it. And it's a lot of like finding vinyl that's really good for it that a lot of people don't care about.
Right, exactly. Like, I mean, yeah, you can pay a lot of money for a first press of, you know, a Coltrane record, but
my point is
that the least white thing about me is still white because you know, jazz is still like the average person who listens to like quality black music is probably not also listening to Miles Davis. Now, they might be.
Yeah.
I just mean the average person. But that's what I'm saying, is that like, that's one of the only notches that I have in my corner for me when it comes to not being the whitest person that you know,
yeah,
is that I have a huge depth of knowledge of jazz. But again, it's been sort of like handed off.
Uh-huh. What the hell is the damn it, I couldn't pull the name of the guy from La La Land.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's my favorite musician.
Ryan Gosling. Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, that's, you know, thank God that Moonlight ended up winning, because I honestly, I thought that La La Land was a good movie, but it definitely, I mean, Moonlight is a total, you know, game changer.
Yeah.
It's like basically perfect. So how far are we?
We have done the most time that's ever been done on this podcast.
Damn, it doesn't seem
it's
like
been
it.
An hour and 45 minutes.
I'm so sorry.
We're going to wrap this up, but Jared, thank you so much for coming on. This is fun. I hope you guys have enjoyed it. Really quickly, I'll say, I have to admit, I just listened to a couple newer Coldplay songs and I didn't hate them as much as I thought. Like, I dropped off for a while.
You just kind of assumed that we would hate them.
Yeah, and they're not great. It's not what you want it to be. Like, listening back to these old ones, they're so much better. But it's like what you said. It's at worst, you're not even going to notice it.
Right.
Like, that new one, the I Don't Want Some Superhero, some fairy tale twist or whatever. It's a little, the lyrics are a little corny, but I still like Chris Martin's voice. It's just a little overproduced now for me. But yeah, in closing,
Tom's headlining this weekend at Go Bananas,
Cincinnati.
A fine club there.
Great
in
club.
Cincinnati. And
Thursday.
You got
Sunday.
Dwight Simmons opening for
my friend
you.
Dwight Simmons is going to be there. It's going to be a
hosting?
Good time. John Holmes, old booze face himself,
the porn actor.
Mm-hmm.
I'm sorry.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm sure he's never heard that before.
So that'll be fun. I mean, rating this playlist is pointless for me because I'm biased as a fan, but I'll give it a 6. Why not?
Well,
6 out of 6.
All right. Do
I would
rate
change
it
out. Yeah, rate it. What do
6.
You think? Hell yeah.
Woo!
Perfect score.
Woo!
Tommy will send in his score later and then we'll tally it all up. But yeah, you know, I'm standing by Coldplay. I think that we've proved our point here.
Yeah, that's right.
And I think that it's probably fine that it was just the two of us on this one, cuz we probably would have talked more than everybody anyway.
True.
Jared, is there anything you want to promote?
No, I appreciate it. I'm happy to be a part of the podcast on a weekly basis. It's a lot of fun.
We're happy to have you.
I look forward to it each week. And
people love your segment.
Absolutely. Well, I'm just going to say one last thing. If you don't like my segment or something that I say in it, don't leave a bad review for the podcast. Write me an email. You know how to get in touch with me. Don't take it out on Tom and Tommy if you don't like me. How about
that? There you go. It's Jared at comedyaddict.com.
That's right. That is right.
There you go. And if you want to get booked.
Yeah, right.
Well, in that case, I will go ahead and say, check out me and Tommy's show, Tom and Tommy, Comedy Mommy, Caroline's on Broadway, September 27th. $10 tickets for the promo code.
Just wait.
Mommy. We got Joe List. We got Aparna on show. We got Christina Hutchinson from the Guys We Fucked podcast, Sean Donnelly, Martin Urbano, and we're thinking a very special guest that will be revealed hopefully soon.
Richard Pryor.
He's coming. He's going to show up, but we're not putting him on unless he barks 10 people in.
Yeah, I don't blame him.
I'll be at Go Bananas. Rate and review the podcast. That helps us out a bunch. And if you got an extra 3 bones each month, why don't you toss it over to our Patreon and get bonus episodes? That is patreon.com/standbyyourband. Thank you again to Jared, and thank you for listening. Go fuck yourselves. Keep it crispy.